Uncertainty and medicine do not go necessarily well together. However, the practice of medicine can sometimes be characterized as much art as science, and that can cause some problems, not just among patients and their physicians and what to do about conditions and treatments, but also with the health insurance industry and how to classify those things and how to pay for them. So we're going to talk about that this morning with the author of a book called The Prince at the Ruined Tower, Time, Uncertainty, and Chronic Illness. Dr. Michael Lochshin is a professor of medicine and obstetrics gynecology at Weill Cornell Medicine and director of the Barbara Volker Center at the Hospital for Special Surgery, all of that in New York City, and he is the one who has written that book. Dr. Lochshin, thanks for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
And a little bit of a homecoming, too. You are a person with Ohio roots, am I right?
Right. I was born in Columbus and spent the first part of my life in Mansfield, Ohio.
Very good. Let's talk about the idea of medical uncertainty. I know we all want the doctor to be absolutely sure of what he or she is saying about what we have. It's just not that easy, though, is it?
No, it isn't. I make the distinction between acute problems and chronic problems. Acute, when like you fracture a leg or have a seizure or a heart attack, something happens very fast and so on. By and large, we know a lot about what to do and exactly where to go with that. But in the chronic illnesses, and that's a large part of America today, oftentimes things take weeks, months, sometimes even years to evolve. They change, they go back and forth, and answers aren't always as clear. You don't see much about that in the press or in the discussions of precision medicine, but it's a very real part of what doctors do.
And that can lead to some problems down the road. And one of them I would imagine is your relationship with your patient. If you are uncertain about what your patient is suffering from, how can you talk to them and how can you interact with them in a way that, you know, comforts them and then moves the treatment and the handling of the condition forward?
Well, I think that probably the most important thing at any time is an open conversation back and forth about what is known, what is not known, and a very careful listening to of the priorities of the patient. For instance, there are some illnesses like ones I deal with where it's kind of easy to take care of, say, pain at the very beginning, but the cost of doing that 10 years from then may be having destroyed hips or destroyed bones because of the medications that we use. And sometimes you have to make the decision, which is your worst fright, the pain today or disability in 10 years. And not everybody makes the same choices on that. There are other times where an illness is just beginning. It isn't quite clear where it's going to go, and you need to sit back and wait and not do anything dangerous until you know exactly where it's going to go. And you have to have the patient in a conversation with you about why you're doing this, what the choices are, what the risks are, and so on. Unless you have that conversation, it just doesn't work.
And if you have a patient who is, pardon the pun, less than patient, how do you as a doctor interact and avoid that patient's wanting to maybe rush into a decision that you as a physician think is not wise?
Well, it comes down to mutual trust. And obviously there are some people who cannot accept that message. But one of the things that we do is try to work with the material we have at hand, what you can read in the patient's eyes, what you can read in body language, to be able to work with the things that the patient is comfortable with. In fact, the title of the book comes from a discussion about understanding a very obscure line from a very obscure French poem in which a wise person said, it isn't what the line says, it's the music and the words that are important. It's the melody that is in the pronunciation. Well, by the same token, I think oftentimes you have to do that. Look for the music and the words of what the patient is saying. People will mislead you. They will not talk about things that embarrass them or they're frightened of. And if a physician is attentive enough, that physician can identify those things and work to a place where the patient is at ease.
It's a fine line to walk. Who is, for lack of a better term, the boss in the relationship, the doctor or the patient?
I'd like to think if anyone is the boss, it should be the patient. But I'd like to think that it's a mutually equivalent conversation, that both people contribute.
In the book, you talk about doctors stepping kind of outside the envelope, put aside some of the dogmatism or some of the conventional wisdom and be creative in the way they go at this relationship, and not just with the patient, not just with the treatment, but also with the, you know, the health insurers, what you call the administrative healthcare world.
You know, that is a huge problem today, because, and partly driven by the idea that everything can be precision medicine right now, we have new coding systems. I don't know if people understand, but every time a doctor sees a patient, they have to write down a series of codes about what the diagnoses are and what happened. If you're, you know, you get an injection, there's a code for that, and so on. It implies a level of precision. And the main reason this is done is mostly for billing, because insurers require it, and they can say, no, I'm not going to pay for that if you didn't use the right code. But the fact is that medicine is nowhere nearly that precise. Once, years ago, we used to be able to admit patients to the hospital with what we used to call RO diagnoses, rule-out diagnoses. So you could suspect something, and you'd admit a patient as rule out this or rule out that, and then over the period of the hospitalization, figure out what was going on. We're not allowed to do that anymore. We have to be very precise about what we label. And I think that makes physicians think only within the box. It takes away the ability to be imaginative and to find out why isn't this correct and think imaginatively about alternative possibilities.
Is there a solution to this in terms of getting through all the administrative red tape? Because it's one thing between a doctor and a patient, or even with the staff in a section of a hospital. Those are people. But when we get into the administrative world, we get into the health insurers, we start dealing with computers, and computers don't recognize uncertainty, do they?
They do not. And that, I guess, is one of the main reasons I wrote this book. If there's a conversation about the fact that uncertainty exists, that, you know, we didn't know in 1960 what we knew in 1980, we didn't know in 2000 what we knew in 1980 what we know in 2000. Things keep on changing. I describe in the book a way in which we can measure in uncertainty and give it a weight in our decision making. So you can make a decision based on this much we know absolutely, say 70% of it, 30% we don't know, and we have to be, it leaves the leeway to discuss that. And when we make decisions, if there's a large enough understanding of this, I must say, over this past weekend, I sent emails to a number of my colleagues about this, and the response was kind of amazing, because everyone's looked back, and some patients as well, and said, yes, we really need to talk about this. So my argument is, if we can talk about the fact that uncertainty exists, that we can incorporate it into our thinking together with what is absolutely certain, we can make much better decisions. And I hope de-emphasize that administrative hassle that we all go through.
If you were to take an estimate, how many Americans out there who are undergoing some kind of medical care right now are dealing with this issue of uncertainty? How large, I guess, maybe a percentage of the patient population out there is faced with this?
It's actually a huge number, because it affects almost all chronic illnesses. I'd say, if you wanted me to put a number on it, I'd say a third. And it happens, my field is in the autoimmune diseases, where this is a huge issue, but it also happens in the chronic neurological diseases. It happens in diabetes, it happens in hypertension, and it happens, in fact, in a lot of the cancers. Not all the cancers are so absolutely cut and dried that there are clean answers for them.
How do patients respond when their physician tells them that hard truth, that, you know, this is just something we're not too sure about, patients, you know, speaking for myself, you know, I want an answer. I want to know what's wrong with me, and then I want you to fix it.
Well, a lot do, but a lot also when they understand. If the conversation is deep enough and personal enough, they begin to understand that. And in fact, one of the chapters in the book is about a woman who flew from a Middle Eastern country precisely to get a clean answer to what she had, and it was not answerable for reasons that you'll see in the chapter. But in the end of the day, even though I talked to her through a translator and so on, we came to an agreement that we didn't need to have a name because I knew something about the process of the problem, and I knew how to deal with that process. So the name was irrelevant. It's a conversation that I have a lot, and I think that most people, if they engage in that conversation, accept it.
Dr. Michael Lockshin is the author of the new book, The Prince at the Ruined Tower, Time, Uncertainty, and Chronic Illness. Doctor, where can we get copies of your book?
It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you can also go to my website, which is my first name, Michael, last name, Lockshin, Lockshin, all one word, .com.
Professor of Medicine and Obstetrics Gynecology at Weill Cornell Medicine and Director of the Barbara Volker Center at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City as well, Dr. Michael Lockshin. Doctor, thanks for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.